Do not attempt to change the channel.
All media are extensions of some human faculty.
Is books part of the media?
Media, we don't need it, do we?
Baby, this thing is bigger than all of us.
The media. A lot of you out there probably never even heard of the word.
Media is any form of communication. It can be radio, television, computers.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
You know, we live in the most mediated society in world history. You spend 10 to 12 hours a day with media. And so I think it makes sense to think about, in a sort of systematic and sustained way, our relationship with media.
Hello. Hello, folks, and welcome to Be the Media. You're listening, of course, to CHLY 101.7 FM here in beautiful sunny Nanaimo today. On this show, we talk about all things media, from the local to the global, including perspectives of both consumers and producers of media. All contributors of Be the Media are faculty, students, and friends of the Media Studies Department and Media Research Lab at Vancouver Island University. I'm Marianne Vanderzon, and I'm here live with Neil Scobie and Joy Googler here in the studio. Today we have a very special show. The full show is going to be a live panel on the subject of writing, specifically fiction. So Joy Googler of Books and Bytes, she's going to be moderating the panel today, and she's going to be joined by three individuals: Susan Juby, who we have also here live in the studio with us, Jay Ruzeski, who's going to be joining us from Victoria, and Amanda Hale. So it's a jam-packed show, and I'm really been looking forward to this for a number of weeks. I also want to mention to you folks that you can certainly contact us and provide us with any feedback that you have or any story ideas, and we really welcome that. And so you can reach us by email at bethemedia@viu.ca. You can also listen to the podcast at any time. Simply go to chly.ca, go to the podcasts, find Be the Media in the list, and off you go. We've got a phenomenal show again. Welcome, Joy. Take it away.
Thanks, Marianne. As you said, I'm really pleased to be surrounded by literary talent today, both for adult and young adult audiences, Susan Juby, Jay Ruzeski, and Amanda Hale. But before I get to their impressive bios, let me set the stage by saying that today's roundtable is a discussion of how technology generally, and the web specifically, has changed the process and promotion of writing creative works. On this large canvas, we'll begin to paint a picture of what the writer's life in the year 2011 really looks like. Expectation from publishers and readers, changes to format and copyright, and where it might all be leading in this brave new world.
Paperback writer.
To my left is Susan Juby. She's the author of seven titles in the last decade, three in her Alice MacLeod teen series from HarperCollins, Alice I Think, Miss Smithers, and Alice MacLeod Realist at Last, also made into a half-hour TV series on CTV and the Comedy Network. These are complemented by two others in the YA genre, Another Kind of Cowboy and Getting the Girl. In the last 2 years, Susan has switched gears to release a memoir entitled Nice Recovery, and on March 8th, less than a month from now, she'll debut her first adult novel, The Woefield Poultry Collective. She has a degree in English Lit from UBC and a Master's of Publishing from SFU, and currently teaches creative writing at UBC and VIU. On the phone from Victoria is poet and novelist Jay Ruzeski, with five titles in his bibliography since the early 90s, including the recently nominated novel The Wolstenberg Clock, shortlisted for the City of Victoria Butler Book Prize, published in 2009 with Thistledown Press. He's also the author of four works of poetry: Am I Glad to See You?, Painting the Yellow House Blue, Writing on the Wall, and Blue Himalayan Poppies, with Thistledown, Outlaw, Anansi, and Nightwood editions, respectively. He's the Malahat Review's longest-standing editorial board member at over 20 years, and organizes its reading series in Victoria, as well as being an advisory board member of the Claremont Review, another literary magazine, this time publishing works by teen writers. His own works in progress include A Blue Opera, a one-man play, and an essay about the bliss of driving a Lamborghini. He teaches creative writing at VIU's Cowichan campus in Duncan. And finally, normally from Hornby Island, but today from Toronto, Amanda Hale, a multimedia artist whose murals and visual art is shown internationally, but she also writes adult fiction, poetry, plays, and screenplays. She's the author of 4 titles for adult literary audiences in the last 10 years, 3 novels, Sounding the Blood, The Reddening Path, and My Sweet Curiosity, and the upcoming March release, a linked story collection set in Cuba in the embrace of the alligator. Sounding the Blood was published by Raincoast in 2001, was voted a top 10 for the year by Now Magazine. It's been translated into Czech, is featured on reading lists at UBC, SFU, UVic, and University of Western Washington, and it's been optioned for a film, for which Amanda is currently writing a screenplay. The Reddening Path has been translated into Spanish and is also an audiobook. She's written 2 poetry chapbooks, Crocodile Sugar and Pomegranate, and her next work is a novel called The Mad Hatter. She has an MA in Creative Writing and Drama from Concordia and teaches writing down the body at U of T. Welcome to you all, and thanks in advance for agreeing to participate in this Trans-Canada call-in.
Afternoon.
Nice to have you all on the line. We're going to start out today by beginning at the beginning, which is writing the manuscript itself, usually a pretty solitary craft. But these days, we've been encouraged, so I hear, from publishers and other authors to be in touch with your readers even before they know they're your readers, and kind of blogging about the work in progress of writing your next book. I'm going to start with Susan and hope that the other two jump in on this topic as well. Can you tell me a little bit, as your novel's just 3 weeks away, and you do have a blog, what that process was like? Did you involve readers right from the beginning?
I did a little bit. I think I'm supposed to do more. I just received 2 handouts from my publisher talking about how I should be Facebooking and Twittering about my writing process, which I thought would be incredibly painfully boring for the readers. So I guess I'll try to engage them a bit more in that. I start to talk about it a bit more, you know, once I've finished a manuscript. You know, I'll talk about the process of sending it in, what kind of editorial responses I'm getting, a revision process. To me, that's more interesting than things they can know nothing about. So, you know, I had character X go over here and it really didn't work out. So back to the drawing board.
Right. And Jay, you've got a blog as well. Do you involve your readers when you're, or perhaps even your students, in the process of writing your, this novel, for example, the nominated title?
Not so much. I mean, I think that the blog is, as Susan says, in a way, I try to think of what might be interesting for people. And for me, I see the blog as just a place to put things that I'm thinking, reviews of things and stuff like that. I don't know that, as far as the solitary art of writing goes, it's still, that part of the process still seems to me to be something that's, I don't know if it's about being private or just that it's about, it needs to be my own until I feel like it's ready to kind of go out into the world. So I don't know that I want to talk about it as I'm doing it. You know, although I think Susan has a good point that what may be interesting to people is hearing a little bit about what happens now I've sent this book out into the world, and, you know, there's a lot of mystery that readers have about the whole publishing world and the process and so on, and talking about that might make sense, but I haven't done that so far.
And Amanda, I know a lot of your works in progress begin not only in your own imagination, but in other countries. I'm wondering if you can talk about your writing process and whether or not that international aspect of it has also involved a web presence.
Well, I tend to agree with Jay. I feel like the writing process is a very private one. I've always been a bit superstitious about talking a lot about a book until it's really established. You know, I've done a couple of drafts because I feel in a way if I talk about it a lot while I'm doing it or in advance of it or just the ideas, then I almost don't need to write it. But it's true. Each of my novels, they have been set in different cultures and dealing with people of many different cultures. So I don't have a blog, but I talk to people quite a lot, sort of in a general way, but I don't share my writing in progress until I've done, you know, a few drafts, and then I start to ask readers to have a look at it. And as I'm just starting to develop a Facebook presence, so I'm kind of changing all my ideas and, you know, broadening my concept of, you know, how we do all this promotion and getting out of this very private, solitary mode, because it's quite a different world out there with Facebook and all these different technologies. So I feel like I'm caught up in this sort of tide of change that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things, if I could, just about blogs and Twitter and so on, is that it takes time to do those things. And one of the issues that we all have, or at least I'll speak for myself, one of the issues I have as a writer is not having enough time to do the writing that I want to do. So so there's always a sense that I have to judge, you know, sort of manage whether it's how worthwhile is it for me to spend a morning writing for my blog instead of working on my novel, because it really is a trade. I could do one or the other, but I can't always do both. And to me, sort of tweeting every few minutes about what I'm up to would just be wouldn't make sense, because it would just distract me from thinking about anything else.
Well,
yes, I agree. I think with, you know, with all of these new technologies, it requires a lot of setting of limits and discipline, because, you know, I know people that do make entries on Facebook every day and they tweet and they blog, but most of them are very disciplined, which, of course, we have to be as writers to even get a book completed. And they, you know, they'll say, well, I'll give myself half an hour every morning, or, you know, 10 minutes for the blog. But I don't know. I feel I could very easily disappear into all of that, because, you know, you tend to lose a sense of time. So my stance is that I really want to orient myself to all these changes and possibilities without investing huge time in any one particular one, because it's just endless, the amount of promotional things that you can do, isn't it?
I was going to say that the New Yorker had a piece last week informing us that blogging was done, and we can all just move on to Facebook and Twitter. So,
well, one of the things you mentioned, Susan, early on was the requests from your publisher, and the questions that I'm sure we all get from students is, you know, what do I need to do to come to the attention of a publisher? If I've got a finished manuscript, I've sent it in, how can I distinguish myself? Is mediagenic behavior and savviness a real plus these days if you have two equally good manuscripts and one of those authors has a blog and Facebook and Twitter account and is, you know, constantly doing meetups and has already got an audience identified for the book? Are they the more likely candidate in the publisher's eyes? Can you each speak a little bit about what your advice would be to a writer who asks that, and perhaps, you know, colleagues as well who are in the process of trying to get a manuscript accepted?
It's Susan. I think that would be a very good idea. Once you've got the work finished, you know, whatever it takes for you to get it finished, if you have an online presence and you're active with your audience already, that's a great thing. Whether your community is your writing group and people involved in your genre, whatever it happens to be, the more you bring to the table, publishers don't have a great deal of money to promote things anymore, so the more you can connect with audience and do those kinds of things and make it sort of a community thing, as opposed to, you know, it'd be nice to be in the garret and having excellent cheese by yourself, but there are other things that need to come into play.
No, it's true, and you, there's a lot of work one has to do as a writer. We want to be read, ultimately, and so when my novel, The Wolzenberg Clock, came out, as the editing process was happening, I reinvented my website, and I decided I would, you know, I got a Facebook page, and I decided I would do everything that I could to help get the book out. I made some study group questions, and Thistledown put them on their website, and I've also I did sort of Skype visits to a couple of book clubs, which was kind of fun, actually, and so I was willing to do all of those things. But for me, the jury's still a little bit out on how much it mattered. I mean, I think that I agree with Susan. For anybody who's writing, we absolutely have to keep up with the technology, and we need to be as out there as we can be. But for me, the jury's still out on how much it really matters.
Mm. Amanda here. Yes, my advice to students would be that it's somewhat of a balancing act. You know, I'd agree with what you've both said. But I would advise a student to focus the main energy on the writing. But of course, when you know, say you're writing a novel, you've written a draft, you have to put it aside for a while, and that's a good time to put on the other hat, you know, and start seeking out what is your audience and revamping your website and all of that. Definitely, it can't be ignored. So I think that it's very important to have balance with it, and it's difficult for me to do the two at the same time, because when I'm immersed in writing a draft of a novel, I don't want any distractions. So I would tend to sort of put the novel aside after whatever draft it is, and then go on to some of these other pursuits and try and find an audience. And for myself, it's only fairly recent that that I'm on Facebook and starting to think in a different way. So it's always been a very grassroots thing for me. I just think books all the time, and wherever I am, I'm always talking to people about books. And I live on Hornby Island, so we have a farmer's market in the summer, and I have my little bookshop there, bookstall, and so I get to talk to hundreds of people, because we have 800 people living there, but in the summer we have 10,000 with the visitors. So we get a lot of people, and I have a lot of people who are always waiting for my next book. So I do the book clubs as much as I can, and just very grassroots. Obviously, you get many more people online, but it's of a different quality. I find people love to meet writers and talk to them.
When you talk to Jay about the jury being out, I think that's a valid point. How do you know when all of this flurry of activity is actually productive in terms of book sales? You don't get your royalties broken down in terms of books sold online as a result of a tweet or a Facebook account, so it's largely anecdotal. But you do perhaps learn a little bit more about your readers, who they are, your demographic, and maybe some of you could speak to that aspect of it. And have you been surprised by who's actually reading your books? Susan?
I've been surprised by, because my first novels were all for young adults, a lot of older people, adults, would write to me and in a sort of shamefaced way say that they read my books and they knew they weren't supposed to, but they were reading them and enjoying them. So that was kind of surprising, but also extremely welcome. They don't necessarily, I hope the books are touching a chord. When people write to me and say how much they enjoyed them, that's a big deal. But I don't necessarily sort of tailor my work to the people that I'm meeting. That's not how I work.
Jay, what's been your experience with readership? Because you have people who are obviously poetry enthusiasts and now people who are reading adult fiction, not necessarily separate demographics at all, but there's some distinctions there. What have you found out about your readers?
Well, I guess one of the things I'd have to say is that that especially having been a poet for out in the world as a poet for sort of 20 years before my novel came out, that I'm used to the publishing world on a kind of a small scale, and poetry just it quietly goes along doing its thing. So for me, as a poet especially, I've always just loved hearing from anybody, and those notes or an email from a student in Manitoba who has to read a poem of mine for a class, they're the things that kind of keep me going, because knowing that there's somebody out there who thought, hey, I actually liked that poem, it wasn't bad, that's real kind of fuel for me. So so mostly what I've enjoyed about any kind of response I've had from readers is just knowing that there are readers, and I love hearing from anybody, just that when they say, hey, I really liked what you did, because we get so little other gratification a lot of the time, and for me, I haven't earned a living, and far from it, as a writer, but I love what I'm doing, and I love hearing from people, and they're a little surprised. I mean, there was a Catholic church group in Ontario who used my novel as one of their, the books on their list through the fall, and so I was kind of interested in that. I didn't Skype into the church, but I would have been happy to talk to them.
And Amanda, your readers are reading sometimes in another language. They're reading in Czech or they're reading in Spanish, and hopefully also are bilingual enough in English to tell you what they think of it. Have you had responses abroad that indicate the culture in those countries in terms of literacy and reading and their preferences or tastes is significantly different from what we expect or think we know about readers in Canada?
Not really. You know, I just I find this a difficult question because I haven't really been surprised. I just find that there are readers across the board, you know, from all walks of life and all ages, and more females than men for my books, because men always tell me, "Oh, I don't read fiction." But I think that leads you to thinking about the border between fact and fiction, which nowadays I think that a lot of people go for nonfiction because actually, you know, the real world is much more surprising than any fictional world could be. But anyway, one thing that did surprise me was my first book, Sounding the Blood. When it went on to a UBC and SFU reading list, and that really surprised me because I had not thought while writing of this as a book for a university reading list, and then it was taken up by UVic and University of Western Washington. So that changed a little bit how I was thinking about my books, because I tend to do a lot of research, and of course it has to be absolutely accurate, and especially if it's going to be used academically. But I think with my books, two people, it depends on people's interests. For instance, one of my books set in Guatemala, anyone who's been in Guatemala and traveled there, they want to read it. Or the one that's set up on the Queen Charlotte Islands, if they've been there, of course, they're definitely going to buy it. So it depends somewhat on the content, I think.
Thanks very much for your comments so far. We're going to take a small pause for a musical interlude from Tegan and Sarah. This is Paperback Head.
You have to become what you fancy. Paperback head, you get carried away. Stitch up your spine, get the suitors away.
Studio listening to CHLY, and this is Be the Media, a special Books and Bites 1 hour panel roundtable discussion with three fiction writers, writers of other genres as well, but primarily we've been talking about our fictional works. And I want to switch gears a little bit now and think about other formats. We tend, of course, to embrace the printed book, and we probably have ridiculous volumes, numbers of volumes of them on our own bookshelves. But increasingly, as you know, from the publishing industry, the discussion is moving towards audiobooks and e-books, especially with the advent of the iPad, which has made reading in that fashion much more sexy than it was with the Kindle or the Kobo reader or the Nook and some of the other competitors. I'm wondering if each of you could speak to the issue of translating, as it were, your work into another format. Susan, I know you have an e-book of one of your children's books, maybe more of them. As I was scrolling along Amazon there, I noticed that, a Kindle edition. And I know Amanda has an audio book. So maybe we can start with you, Susan, and just tell us a little bit about what that conversation was like with the publisher, or if you even had much to do with it.
It's an automatic thing now with my books, is that's part of the contract that I sign, is there'll be an ebook edition. With my older titles, they didn't make it into an ebook edition until I said, oh, could somebody do this? So they made sure to do it. And now I sort of wonder whether I should have got those rights back for myself and sold them myself, because that's something a lot of writers are doing now, and for some people it's a pretty great revenue stream. I don't think I have the technological savvy to make that work. I have also had an audiobook of my first novel, Alice, I think, and personally I listen to in the neighborhood of 2 or 3 audiobooks a week, so that's a form that I'm really interested in.
You listen to them because you're commuting and you're listening in the car? Or?
Well, you can't stop reading ever, even if it's, you know, so it's a chance for me to read while I'm driving and while I'm walking the dog. And yeah, so there's never a break.
Wonderful. And Jay, can you tell me a little bit about whether these conversations are ones you've had with Thistledown and Nancy or with, your future publisher, even if you've got works in progress?
Yeah, and Matt and I were just talking before we started this conversation, and Thistledown, it's a small press in Saskatoon, and they're just in the process of figuring out how they're going to respond to the ebook market. So I'm having discussions with them about making The Wolzenberg Clock into an ebook, and one way or another, I want that to happen. But it's sort of in process at the moment, so we're not quite sure how it's going to go. For me, when the iPad came out, I thought, okay, that changes the rules. You know, I think that things are going to be a little bit different now. And although I think, you know, one of the things that we have to realize is that the book is quite good technology. You know, it's portable and you can read it in the bathtub. And a lot of people really love books, and I don't think that's going to stop happening. But I also think that more and more people are reading books with readers and things like that. And so all I really care about is that somebody's reading it. I don't really care how they're reading it. But I think it's probably pretty essential. And I think that the whole publishing industry is being really shaken up by that whole process, because as Susan says, we don't really need the publishers anymore if we're only going to do an electronic book, because what they used to do, getting it out into the world, isn't really necessary in terms of, you know, and actually making the physical book isn't really necessary with the electronic media. So I'm not sure what that's going to mean. You know, I think I know that the publishing industry is going to look a lot different 10 years from now than it does right now.
Amanda, can you speak a little bit? I mean, I realized only after inviting you all here that all three of you have been published by Thistledown. Your first book was with Thistledown, Susan. Mm-hmm. So, as Jay says, a small press in Saskatoon, though the editorial center of it and publishing center of it is on Hornby Island, where Amanda lives, and just goes to show you that there is a virtual workplace at work as well. And I know you were a big proponent of getting an audiobook, Amanda. Can you talk about what it's like to hear, hear your words in that format?
Mm-hmm. I just want to say on the topic of Thistledown that they are the most wonderful publisher to work with. It's been a very, very positive experience for me. There's only 3 people running that publishing house right now, and they work so hard, and they really care passionately about books. So I'd just like to say that publicly. The audio book that I did of The Reddening Path, I did on my own initiative because there happened to be somebody with a sound studio on Denman Island, the next island from Hornby, you know, who was offering an affordable way for me to do that. And I, like Susan, love audiobooks. I listen to a lot of them. I get them from the library all the time. So it was just a labor of love to do it. The difficulty has been in marketing them, you know, because Thistledown is great. They'll support any initiative that, you know, that a writer does for publicity and so on. I think there's an awful lot of my audiobooks sitting in the warehouse here in Toronto. But you know, I'm still working on how to get them out. But, you know, it was something I did also partly in response to a lot of people who are getting macular degeneration and various eyesight problems who, you know, I would meet at the market or wherever looking for audiobook versions of my novels. So I do hand sell quite a lot.
Most of the audiobooks seem to...
And as far as the e-book, of course, I don't have an e-book, but it is something that I'm planning to talk to my publisher about. And I agree with Jay, you know, that the physical book will always be around. There will always be people that want to just read the traditional book. And at the moment, it just feels like, you know, there's such rapid change. A friend of mine calls it the bleeding edge because, you know, there's... all these new technologies happening all the time, and everything is just kind of flying around there. And it remains to be seen, you know, what's going to endure from all that. I mean, for instance, they say Twitter and MySpace and LinkedIn and Second Life are all kind of going under, and Facebook. Somebody at the Writers Union workshop I was at last week said, well, in a year from now, nobody really is going to be paying much attention to Facebook. It just seems like, you know, there's this roller coaster of new ideas all the time, which is partly why I don't want to, you know, take it too very seriously and get to spend too much time on any one thing. But at the same time, you know, going along with it and keeping an open mind.
Well, Facebook set the bar pretty high in terms of the billions and millions of users that they have and page views and so on. So I guess anybody compared to them might look like they're less successful, but you're right in acknowledging how quickly there's turnover in real estate online. And I was going to mention, just apropos of audiobooks, that audible.com is probably the biggest site for sales of those and has done a good job with pickup. But Jay, did you have something to add?
Well, I think one of the things we have to ask ourselves with all kinds of technology, and whether it's sort of trying to, you know, promote our books on Facebook or produce ebooks for iPads and so on, is exactly, you know, what do we need, you know, what do we want and what do we need, you know, and I mean that as consumers as well as producers. So that, I mean, with electronic books, for example, I don't know if others are aware, but most academic libraries now, a number of academic libraries in Canada, in fact, I think most of them, have stopped purchasing physical books altogether, and they only buy electronic books. And and as an academic and with students, you know, in some ways, academic books on as e-books are fantastic because when somebody's doing research, all they have to do is search for the book, they find it, and it shows up right away, and it's right there, and they can cut and paste stuff. And, you know, for doing research work, electronic books are absolutely amazing. But the kind of books that we're writing, you know, for novels, it's really how different is the experience, you know, sitting in a chair reading a book or reading an electronic book, and do you really need it to be the electronic book, or what does it do for you? So I don't think it does the same thing for the I don't think all e-books are equal, if you know what I mean, that for some genres or for some material it makes all kinds of sense, but for other stuff, I'm not sure how vital it is to have my, you know, poetry book as an e-book, how many more people would rather read it, you know, as a physical book.
We're certainly seeing a lot of students, you know, with iPads in the hallways, though we can't assume economically that everybody can afford an extra $500 toy to read books in that format. And certainly the other readers that I mentioned are cheaper, in the neighborhood of $100, $120, though often a little bit less satisfying. People can read on their laptops, and most people do have a personal computer or access to one reasonably
easily, but will they sit and read a full book in one setting, or do you only need to read parts of the book, as Jay mentioned, for research and search narrows in on what you're looking for pretty quickly? All of you, to a certain extent, are early adopters or at the bleeding edge, as it were, in that you're authors who have embraced these technologies at least as supplementary, complementary, and are not upset about the way in which your words are being delivered. As Jay said, you want readers and you'll give them what they want in whatever format. I'm thinking about the question of where these books are bought, because that also is one close to many writers' hearts, independent bookstores versus the big box chain stores like Barnes & Noble, Borders, Chapters, Indigo, online, Amazon, and how those two have fared in the playing field. Obviously, there are fewer and fewer independents, more and more people buying online, and then also buying their ebooks from specifically from certain sites and vendors. Susan, can you talk about your support of the bookstore environment or preferences, or do you leave it up to the readers to get your work where they want it?
I've just started listing on my website for the individual books as many links as I can to independents and to the chains. That's not something I did before. I just thought people would go to the bookstores. I mean, I want to support any bookstore as much as I can. You know, it's a tough business out there, so I'm grateful for any, you know, shelf space or any of those kinds of things. It's I'm woefully, I don't actually know where my books are selling. It's just not something I can keep up with, so I don't know how many ebooks I sell versus how many books from chain bookstores versus independent bookstores. I do know, though, when an independent bookstore gets behind one of your books, it can make a huge difference. So one of those wonderful independent bookstores that has become stronger in this market, those are the people that you really want, you know, with you, because they can make a big difference. A place like Vancouver Kids Books, very successful. Woozles in Halifax, very successful. So I'd love to have relationships with those stores.
And Jay, you're in Victoria, home to Munro's, and one of the consistently nominated best independent bookstores. Can you talk about what you do locally and perhaps online to support the sales of your titles?
Well, I do think, yes, trying to have a relationship with the bookstores makes sense. I did my Victoria book launch at Bolin Books here in Victoria, and I went into Munro's and talked to them and, you know, signed copies of my books in there. And I just love bookstores, so partly what I try to do is buy my books there, and I think that there's, you know, same thing. I think that there are a lot of people who like bookstores and like what it means to go into a bookstore and just browse for a little while. But Susan's quite right; it's a really tough game these days. So I think that we have a lot of shared interests. The bookstores sort of need us to do what we can for them, and we need certainly need them to do what they can for us. So it's whatever work we can do, like book signings or book launches in small bookstores, that is, I think, really important work.
Amanda, the bookstore on Hornby Island is literally not much bigger than a closet. It's tiny, but it has a remarkable stock, and it orders books in for you. I've been there a number of times where you couldn't have a signing in it, but you could have a signing outside of it. Can you talk about your support of independents and perhaps other formats? You're in Toronto now, where there are a slightly healthier number of independent bookstores.
Yes, well, of course, I love people to buy my books from the independent bookstores. And the bookstore that you're mentioning, Joy, it's 32 books. It's a satellite branch on Hornby Island of the original 32 books in North Vancouver, which is very supportive of me and my work. I've had already two launches at 32 books in North Van, and I'll be having my next one there in May, and also a reading through 32 books on Hornby Island. And they're an excellent bookstore. You know, they can get anything for you. I mean, often things you want are not there, but they can have it in for you very quickly. And so when people ask me, you know, if they don't want to buy directly from me, they ask, where can they buy my books? And so I suggest to them that they go to their local independent bookstore, and probably my book won't be there, but that they could order it. Because often individual readers don't realize that, you know, they can order a book and that get it pretty quickly. With my first book, it went out of print because Raincoast stopped doing literary fiction, so they weren't going to do a second edition. So I reprinted it with Phoenix Books, which is a publishing arm of the Writers Union, but they don't do distribution. So what happens there is that it's a print-on-demand book done by Island Blueprint in Victoria. So, you know, I put on my website that people can get it print-on-demand. But I like Susan's idea of putting links on the website of particular bookstores where people could order from. And I know that quite a few people go to Amazon for Sounding the Blood, my first book, because it's not available directly through the bookstores. And also, I always refer people to the library because, you know, I get a lot of my books from the library. Nobody can really afford to buy all the books that they want to read. And with the, when people take books from the library, we get a payment every year through the public lending rights. So, you know, it does benefit the writer somewhat.
Yes. I love the image of Amanda at the Saturday market on Hornby Island with her books on it. So there's, you know, the eggs over there and the lettuce over there and the fiction right there. I think that's fantastic.
Yes, the market sells many things other than produce.
And we are going to be talking about many things other than printed books and the process of writing them, and we'll be right back. But until then, we're going to hear from Sheryl Crow and the book. We're back in the studio with Susan Juby, Jay Rozeski, and Amanda Hale talking to me, Joy Googler, on Books and Bites, a segment of Be the Media. And we're talking today about all things related to writing and technology. In particular, we've been talking about the various formats of books and where to buy them. But then there's that whole issue of marketing them and launching them. And as Amanda and Susan are just about to launch their books in the next half you know, the next 3 or 4 weeks, actually, you've probably been thinking a lot about this. And even the launch of a book, which are usually good for tasty little anecdotes, and students and would-be writers like to hear about that exciting moment when the book comes out of the box and finds its way into the hands of readers and buyers. But even that process has been changing. Some people have been doing virtual launches. They've been launching by Skype. They've been launching on YouTube. They've been involving other technologies. Do you have anything planned with the launch and marketing of the book, Susan? I've heard tell of something to do with a hen purse. Can you please explain?
Always dignified over here. My new novel is called The Wofield Poultry Collective. And so I had an advance giveaway for people who were interested in the book. And I gave away these plastic hen-shaped purses, sort of life-size. They were amazing. And I
want one.
Yes, so did most of the world, it turned out. I'm not sure how interested they were in my book, but they were definitely after that hen purse. And I'm going to hold a book launch at a local restaurant and try to have some local food there, more successful than the food in my book. And I'm also going to have a couple of chicken-shaped cakes, so I expect it to be a good time. It'll be at the Urban Beat on April the 1st from 7 to 8:30, if anyone's interested. There may be a chicken purse there. I'm not sure.
And I also saw a cake for Nice Recovery that had a Barbie face down in the icing. I think you're going to have to do some explaining there as well.
Nice Recovery is a story of my recovery from alcohol addiction, and they did a wonderful cover for it, which was a young woman face down in a red shag carpet wearing a white dress. It was very striking, this cover. And so I had the store, the bakery, recreate the cover in this enormous cake and, made the doll the right clothes. So it was an exact match. It was a showstopper, that cake. These launches are just a chance for me to have fun and indulge myself, I think.
And are they captured on film? Do they live in infamy forever online?
Well, there are some accounts of it, yes. Lots and lots of photos. People tend to have a good time at these things, so we'll see. It's always fun to have a few gimmicks. I love a good gimmick.
And did you give away watches, Jay, for the Wolfsburg clock or launch it in a bell tower? Or what happened with your release?
Well, those are good ideas. No, I launched it at Boland Books, I didn't have anything for the, coming out of the Cracker Jack box, but next time I will. I'll have to think. I'm inspired by Susan, so I'll have to think about that for the next one.
Have you had people respond to your books online and ask for some sort of more intimate connection with you, Jay, through comments or through, you mentioned Skyping to book clubs? I guess people want to see you, not just hear you and be a little bit closer to the writer, him or herself. And how have those experiences been for you?
As I said, I get some comments from people online and so on, but really there's nothing as gratifying as talking to people face to face. So I've had some comments and things like that. One of the things I did on my website is I put up some photographs of the real clock that was the inspiration for my novel, which is the astronomical clock in the Strasbourg Cathedral in France. And a number of people have gone and looked at those photographs and then, said things about those. But that's about the extent of it so far.
And Amanda, are you planning something multimedia as a multimedia artist for In the Embrace of the Crocodile, which is coming out on March 8th?
No, I'm planning some Cuban music, because with my last novel, My Sweet Curiosity, it opens with somebody busking on the street with a cello playing the Bach cello suite. So I had cellists to play just before the reading at two of my launches for that. And for this one, because it's short stories set in Cuba, I have a cellist friend who plays jazz and various things with a guitar partner. So they're going to come and play some Cuban music. And I've got three launches planned so far. The first one's in Toronto at Ben McNally Books, which is a beautiful bookstore. It's down in the business district, and it's located where in the building of that used to be the old currency exchange. So it's got beautiful high ceilings, and it's very spacious and lovely golden wood floor. And I had my last one there, and it was a wine and cheese party, and I had a really good crowd. So I'm expecting another party, especially with this Cuban music. And then I have one planned for May the 3rd in Vancouver at 32 Books in North Van, which is a smaller space, but we always fill it. And then I'm doing one in Victoria at the Vancouver Island School of Art on Quadra. And I don't know if I'll have anything special there, but it remains to be seen. But I love the idea of the April 1st launch. I wish I could be at the Urban Beat, but I'll still be in Toronto.
Well, I may also have misstepped. I know the title has gone from Embrace of the Crocodile to Embrace of the Alligator, and it is Alligator. Is that right?
It's Alligator, yes. And the reason being that Cubans call their island El Caiman, which translates as alligator, because if you look at the map of Cuba, it is sort of roughly in the shape of an alligator, and the snout being down in the southeast corner and one of the arms visible, and that's where most of my book is set, is in Baracoa, which is right down where the snout and the eye of the crocodile is.
And Susan, your website is counting down the days to the delivery of the book. I think we're at 25 days maybe or something like that when I looked yesterday. It's on March 8th, and I gave you the same launch date. But I think, Amanda, your website says March the 15th, though, as we know from the world of publishing, that's not always something that you can count on. It's a little bit flexible. Is that right?
Nothing is certain until the book is in your hands.
One of the questions we opened with was what publishers expect of you. I want to turn the tables now and say, what do you expect of publishers in our all-powerful world of Be the Media? We can embrace the hypothetical. So let's imagine a situation where you're at lunch with your publisher and you want them to be more aggressive or more of a partner, perhaps, in selling and promoting your book. What do you ask them to do?
Well, I hope they'll be at least as active online as I am. So if they're active online and have, built up some interesting things there that draw audiences, that we can work together to make that happen. So, for instance, HarperCollins has something called the Savvy Reader, and so they will have things like columns by writers, and it's got lots of tremendous content on there, so we can work together on those things. They run different sorts of promotions. They are really, really effective online, so I've appreciated what they've done. And they run little videos, and they're very smart about their online promotions.
And Jay and Amanda, with Thistledown, you acknowledge that they're a smaller publisher with fewer resources than HarperCollins, certainly, but still actively looking forward to the future and how they can participate online and through ebooks. Do you have conversations with them? Let's start with Jay about what can happen, for example, in light of the nomination for the Victoria Book Prize. Are they involved online? Or are you involved online to try and reinvigorate sales in light of that?
Well, one of the things I have to, first of all, agree with Amanda Thistledown is they're amazing to work with. And one of the things about a smaller press like Thistledown that I was so thrilled about was sort of some of the non-electronic help that I got from them. I mean, I had my editor there, Sean Virgo, was absolutely amazing, and I felt like I got a kind of attention from Thistledown and from Sean that I'm not sure that I would have had from even from a really big press. So some of that, some of that is what those small presses do so well. And really what I wanted from them, and I feel like I've got it, is they've just been open to anything that I wanted to do. And yes, of course, they tried as well as they could to announce things like the nomination and so on, and to help me get the word out. So I felt like they're doing all they can with the tools that they have, and they're learning and adapting as things go. All publishers are having to scramble to figure out what it means to be in the 21st century world of publishing.
And Amanda, can you speak to the future of what you anticipate? You've had some conversations, obviously, recently. You mentioned the workshop from the Writers Union last weekend when you were getting a sort of view of the landscape as they see it. What are you passing on those ideas to your contacts at Thistledown, or are you trying to pursue those on your own?
Well, both, Joy. I haven't had the chance to talk to the Thistledown people yet about it. When I'm back out west, I always have a lot of conversations with Al Forey, who's the publisher. And I'm passing on information to a lot of my writer friends here because it was a very stimulating workshop. These Writers' Union workshops happen every year, and this one, it's Secure Footing in a Changing Literary Landscape with Betsy Warland and Scott Laird. And they're actually going across the country giving these workshops in every major city. I think that Vancouver and Victoria will be in early May, but people can find that online. And it's open to people who are not members of the Writers Union also. It was very stimulating, somewhat overwhelming, just with all about how to build your platform out there on the web and, you know, a million things you can do. It's literally infinite. So one has to just kind of take it with a grain of salt at this point because it can't all be done at once. But very exciting ideas, really. And, as far as what would one want from a publisher, I mean, I still and probably will always have those fantasies about the old-fashioned book launch where you had your own publicist and you go on tour and everything. But obviously that's not going to happen anymore. And it can happen in a much more virtual way. And I can only echo what Jay has said, because I'm so grateful to Thistledown Press for being the kind of press they are, with that just wonderful attention to, you know, to what you want on the cover, and you get a lot of input into everything, that I couldn't honestly ask them for any more than that. And they're very clear. I think probably any of the really small presses are very clear with a writer from the beginning that promotion is up to us. I mean, it is, even with a big publisher, because after the first 3 months they're all onto the next list of books anyway, so we have to take responsibility, and it's, I think it's always been somewhat like that, but it's getting more so now. So I'm prepared to do that, and one of the main things that came up at this Writers' Union workshop was that so many people are doom and gloom and nobody reads anymore, you know, and it's all going downhill. But in fact, the reality is we're very fortunate to be living in this really exciting time of change in the world. And then, as you know, as writers, there's many, many possibilities opening up to us as long as we don't kind of get sidetracked and forget to keep writing.
Thank you all so much for being here and talking about books. I have the feeling we could go on all. And I would be happy to do so with all of you. Perhaps we'll have to have you back for round two. We're going to sign off now, but I just wanted to do a very quick round. If each of you could give the URL of your website, that would be ideal. And we look forward to the launches of the Wolfield Poultry Collective and to the In the Embrace of the Alligator and the celebration of the Rosenberg Clock from the attention that it's deservedly getting from Victoria and across the country, and just wanted to make sure that our listeners know where they can find more about you. Susan, do you want to start the circuit?
Sure. www.susanjuby.com.
Thank you. And Jay?
Well, I'm on the VIU website, so it's viu.ca/RUZESKYJ, but if you just Google Jay Ruzeski and VIU, you'll find me.
Okay. And Amanda?
My website is amandahale.com, and I also have a professional page on Facebook.
Thanks so much. And now to Mary.
Thank you all very much for joining us on Be the Media. A fabulous show. Thank you in particular to Joy Googler for setting it up. And thank you to all the artists, all the authors, Susan Juby, Jay Ruzeski, and Amanda Hale. Also, thanks to Neil Scobie, and I'm Marianne Vanderzon. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Be sure to contact us with feedback or story ideas, bethemedia@viu.ca. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, too, you can find our podcast at chly.ca. And go to the podcasts link. You'll find us in the list, Be the Media. We're going to sign off the show.
Sebastian, you're in a mess. You had a dream, they called you king of all the hipsters. Is it true or are you still the queen? Like getting blood out of a stone, the city left you lost and gone. You came to dance, but there's no poignancy when they all leave you standing alone. Standing alone. The wider issues of the day just pass you by. You're gonna pay for looking at the floor when people talk to you. You wrote a book about yourself, the people left it on the shelf. Write another one. Now you've got a story that's worth talking about. Talking about. Talking
Be the Media is brought to you by the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at VIU.
How does that grab you?